the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to another edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, for many decades, retirement was based on a pretty fixed three-leg formula stool that would sound something like this. Number one, Social Security. Number two, a secure pension plan, obviously issued by whatever company you worked for a long time for. And number three, personal savings. And it stayed that way for decades. This was just pretty much a ritual formula that advisors went through. And then in the 1970s, we began to see guaranteed pension plans go away. And as plans not only go away, some of them are going bankrupt, individuals have two things left. Number one, obviously, so far, Social Security, and the government's going to have to deal with that at some time in the future. And number two, or I should better say the Congress, Jim. And number two, anything they put away in savings or, say, a 401k plan, which we've discussed at length here on the program. The result is that most baby boomers are working longer into what their retirement years are. They're delaying retirement. Part of this is the result of having longer lifespans, but then they have to deal with longer lifespans. And the result is the retirement landscape has changed dramatically. And so for many people, retirement is not a reality, and yet for others who can retire, they face the prospect of going broke. So, Jim, since you have worked in the retirement market throughout your career, what would you say the major factors are that changed us from back then to where we are now?
You know, John, I would say probably the biggest change that came down the line, and we saw this in the 70s, was the change from defined benefit pension plans to what we call defined contribution plans, most notably the 401k plans that are prevalent today. Because, I mean, if you think about it, after World War II, Dad went to work for a company. Most of his career, he probably spent 25, 30, even 40 years working for the same company. And he knew when he was going to retire, he was going to get anywhere from 70 to 80% of his pay as a pension. Then you throw in Social Security, it would make up the difference, John. So most people that entered to retirement, let's say in the early 80s, late 70s, they really got a retirement check that was equivalent to what they earned when they were working, because the defined benefit pension plan and Social Security was equal, and in many cases, better than what it was when they were working. So that was probably the first big factor. I would say the other thing that has really changed the retirement landscape is two back-to-back bear markets. We had one at the beginning of the new millennium with the bursting of the tech bubble. 7 years later, we had the great financial recession. So boomers who were doing very well in the stock market in the 80s and 90s all of a sudden got hit with a severe bear market at the beginning of the decade. And 5 years later, when the market went up, they got hit with another bear market. This time, not only did they get hit with a bear market in stocks, but they also got hit with a bear market in one of their most valuable assets, which was real estate. So that changed. So a lot of people didn't have the assets they thought they were going to retire. I think another thing that impacted the market was quantitative easing. Because, John, 10, 15 years ago, getting 5, 6, 7, or 8% was a pretty easy thing. And you could do so with safe investments, whether high-grade corporate bonds or U.S. Treasuries, sovereign debt. So with quantitative easing, we've seen the lowest interest rates in recorded history, and that's impacting people's portfolios when you're trying to live off the interest or the dividends that you receive. The other thing that has happened is medical inflation, and especially with the passage of Obamacare, we've seen premium increases. There was an article that just came out in the Wall Street Journal this week. And this goes back to George W. Bush with Medicare Part D, which is drug prescription. A lot of individuals that have Part D in their Medicare are starting to see double-digit increases in large out-of-pocket expenses. So medical inflation is a major factor that is hitting a lot of retirees today, as we've talked about. It keeps going up each year. But the average retired couple should plan on spending probably $250,000 out-of-pocket for everything from Medicare premiums to Medigap insurance to out-of-pocket expenses. And then finally, John, one that you touched on with medical science and advancement today, people are simply living longer. So you add all of those up and it's really changed the retirement market in ways we could never have imagined. So it's not just one thing that you can say, okay, that was it. It's a combination of factors.
You know, on the weekend show, Jim, for people who don't hear it that listen to Lifetime Income Only, we discuss oftentimes interest rates being at the lowest levels in recorded history, although they're slowly scrunching up now as the Fed goes through some rate hikes. This is terrific if you're borrowing money for a car. I mean, when I bought some of my most recent autos, you know, we're looking at the lowest interest rates. It's almost like paying nothing. You know, you get a five-year loan in which you're paying virtually no interest, so you're just paying your car off over time. And good if you're buying a house or refinancing. You'd be dumb if you didn't do it back in that time. But it's a horrible impact on savings. I have to laugh every time I have it when I look at savings account for cash that's slushing through there, and it'll come at the end of the month. Congratulations, you got 0.01 cents. Interest is what they, I'll go to Carol and go, whoopee, I feel rich.
Well, you know? Remember also, too, John, prior to the Fed rate raising cycle, at least we're at a Fed funds rate at 1.25, so there is some money coming in money market funds, but for a couple of years, there was nothing. I mean, you'd get your statement and you'd have a lot of money in the money market fund, and congratulations, you know, you earned 2 cents or you earned $2. But here's one of the best examples I can give you, because most people, when they head into retirement, get more conservative with their investments. And you think of things like Ginnie Mae's, you think of treasuries, you think of high-yield corporates. John, if we were to go back to the year 2000, and let's say you had $1 million, it was no problem if you were investing in bonds, whether they were corporate or they were, let's say, sovereign bonds like U.S. Treasuries, you could get $70,000 to $80,000 a year in income. If you were a little bit more conservative, you kept your money at the bank, or let's say in two-year treasuries, you could get $50,000. You compare that to what you're getting in interest rates today. Today, a 10-year treasury note on $1 million would only produce $23,000 versus $70,000 to $80,000 at the beginning of the decade. A two-year treasury note on $1 million would only produce $13,000 of income. So that's just one example that I can think of how dramatically lower interest rates have been one of the factors that have contributing to the change in the investment landscape and also retirement.
And so what we're seeing here is the combination of factors, changes in pensions. There's medical inflation, which, as you know, you and I both know, Jim, has been disproportionately out of sync with regular inflation, with regular commodity inflation. We've had bear markets, and all of these have combined over time to alter the retirement landscape. So the result of that, as we can well see out there, baby boomers are delaying retirement. They're working longer. Or even if they go into retirement, they're working part-time because they simply don't have the assets to retire full-time on income from whatever they saved before or whatever investment plans they had, or simply that they're existing partially on the retirement income and they need further assets to supplement that. And so that's where the working part-time would come in.
Yeah, it's really become an issue, and especially with boomers who the only steady thing that they get that's predictable has been their Social Security. And so what's happening, you're seeing this reflected in the stock market. We talked about this on the weekend program with my technician, Ralph Ancampora, but you're basically seeing this yield chase or a search for yield in the marketplace. And John, it's not just retirees. Pension funds are looking for this. Insurance companies are looking for this. And so you're seeing this reflected in the stock market, where you're seeing a new record for the Dow utilities, because the utilities pay a higher dividend than other areas of the market. In consumer staples, which are also known for their steady dividend yields. But at the same time, you're seeing new records in the NASDAQ. So you got this bifurcated market where people are either looking for yields, which is pushing up the utility index and consumer staples, or they're looking for growth, which is they're pushing them into the technology market. The only problem here is people that are searching for yields don't realize that high yield comes at a risk. And unfortunately, the vast majority of a lot of retirees have their money in bond funds or bond ETFs, and they don't understand the concept of duration, which is simply a concept of how subject to risk is the bond portfolio to a rise in interest rates. The other thing they don't really understand is what an interest rate cycle can do for you. For example, when the Fed first announced taper, we saw the 10-year Treasury note double in the six-month period with double-digit losses in 2013. And then, of course, we saw the Fed raise interest rates in December, and they did it in March. But instead of long-term interest rates going up, they've stayed rather moderate in a narrow trading range. And a lot of that is because the U.S. offers the highest interest rate in any kind of sovereign market around the world. I don't care if you're looking at Europe, Japan, or elsewhere. So a lot of foreign money is coming into the U.S. market, which is helping to suppress rates and flatten rates on the long end. But eventually, the interest rate cycle, the Fed will keep raising interest rates, and they'll usually do so until something breaks in the economy or the financial markets. And as they do, that at some point is going to create turbulence in the bond market when you see credit spreads widen. That's the interest rate on, let's say, a sovereign bond like U.S. Treasuries and the interest rate offered on junk bonds to corporate bonds. But that eventually happens in an interest rate cycle, and many investors are unaware of the risks that are out there when you're in the middle of a Fed rate raising cycle. And so most people that have been in bond funds probably over the last 8 or 9 years have gotten a monthly check. They've probably seen that income drop, but they look at those bond funds like a money market fund and don't realize that they can lose money. They lost money in 2013, and there's some brief periods when they gave back all their gains. Last year was a good example where you had these tremendous gains in your bonds in the first 6 months of the year as we got to the lowest interest rate in recorded history in June and July of last year. And then you gave back most of those gains by the end of the year. So they really don't understand the risk that they're taking when they're making those investments.
So given this fact that more retirees now are more dependent on Social Security and savings rather than pensions and or other implements, how can you mitigate or minimize risk in this circumstance?
Well, I mean, the number one is if you don't have enough assets, you mentioned this earlier in this broadcast, is you work longer to build up capital. A second way that you can sort of supplement your income, and we're seeing a lot more people doing this. There's been just a number of studies, not only studies, but articles in the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, talking about a lot of boomers today are choosing to work part-time to supplement their income in many ways, John, in areas that they really enjoy. In other words, they're doing something different than what they did during their working career. The other thing that you might want to do is devise an income stream. For example, immediate annuities is one way to create stable income like Social Security. It's basically what defined benefit pension plans do. And what happened in the past when people got their pensions and they were sort of guaranteed, the company put away so much money, they gave it to an insurance company, and the insurance company would say, based on your life, that of your spouse, we're going to give you this income for the rest of your life. You can still do that. If you don't have enough assets, you may have to end up monetizing part of those assets by putting them in an immediate annuity to create stable income. The other thing that is very, very important, because we talked about medical inflation and the fact that people are living longer, is dividend stocks that have a history, especially dividend aristocrats that have a 25 to even 50 year history of raising their dividends each year, so that you can be assured 10 years from now, 15 or maybe 20 years from now, when you're really going to need a higher income stream to pay for those medical bills, you're going to have more income. And in a Fed rate raising cycle, and the fact that we have now begun a new long-term bear market in bonds, a laddered bond portfolio, or what we call adjustable rate bonds that adjust upward as the Fed raises cash. Another thing, and we've talked with numerous guests on the program, is building a cash cushion for a bear market. And especially many of you who are taking systematic withdrawals. In other words, your assets are all in, let's say, mutual funds or ETFs. And what you're doing is you're taking a flat amount out of your account every single month. Well, that works as long as we're in a bull market. It does not work when stocks and bonds are going down. For example, between the fall of 2007 to March of 2009, the S&P 500 lost 58% of its market value. You do not want to be liquidating your mutual fund shares in a downward market, because you are liquidating these shares at lower and lower prices. And as this continues, you're going to have fewer shares by the end of the bear market. So a good example to avoid this is build up a cash cushion where you can either turn down the amount that you're withdrawing or live on cash during the duration of the bull market, rather than drawing down your assets at such lower prices. The other thing too is designing some kind of flexibility into your budget. I have one client, for example, they like to travel, and that's a good portion of their discretionary budget. But during the bear markets or during market weakness, they simply just changed their travel plans. They, you know, during 2008 and 2009, instead of going to Europe or going to Australia, they simply just basically took their vacations, seeing their kids locally and staying with their kids so they could minimize on the cost of, let's say, travel. So, John, these are just a number of ways that you can reduce risk. And it's important, you know, depending on your circumstances, that you try to adjust or make accommodation for risk, because you don't see risk. Usually it's staring you in the face, but you don't see it. I mean, who knew about the housing crisis? Few out there did talk about it. We talked about it here on the program. But even Fed officials like Ben Bernanke said, you know, housing was in good shape. People on Wall Street said, as long as the music's playing, you got to dance. So there was a lot of risk out there, but people didn't see it until it imploded.
Well, you can see this one developing too, because when we've talked about bond funds in the past, we're pointing out there's a risk there, and many investors don't understand the risks they're actually taking. And what we're seeing now is a new long-term bear market in bonds, which is going to severely affect that. And that means you have to pick up some other kind of strategy.
Well, you do that, and a lot of people are going for what they call these indexed annuities, and they don't realize the risk that they're taking there. In other words, there's upside risk. You're limited to the amount that you can gain, and you may end up being stuck in a bear market with low rate of returns. And there's also a risk, too, in owning stocks, especially in a high-priced market. So you have to be very selective, know what you own, and buy something that is value and something that has a good history of raising dividends. So that, for example, a lot of these blue chip stocks got their names blue chips because even during the great financial recession, a lot of these companies kept raising their dividends year in and year out. So even though the stock price went down, if you were relying on those stocks for dividends, not only did the dividends not stop, they actually gave you a pay increase every single year. So throughout the financial crisis, you know, you got your dividend, but you also got a dividend increase every single year.
Let's put some of this into practicality here. I mean, I know you have financial planning strategies for your clients. When we're talking about this type of thing, how do you advise mitigating risk for their investments?
You know, if you're in funds and ETFs and you're taking a systematic withdrawal rate, the thing that we try to do is we set aside or what we call a cash reserve, because when we manage money and we're heading into the bear market, we start increasing our positions in bonds, and we've been doing that steadily since last fall. And the other thing we do is we like to keep cash reserves, because at some point we will be in a bear market. And when you're in a bear market, that means things are going down, and we tend to get more defensive. And so we might go to larger cash positions. We might go to shorter bonds, which don't pay as much. But hopefully with the Fed raising interest rates, that's changing. So that's one strategy. And the second strategy that we try to use, if you don't have enough assets, let's say you just, you know, between putting kids through school, maybe getting laid off in a recession, two bear markets, you just simply don't have enough assets to retire in the lifestyle that you had when you were working. Well, one aspect or one strategy we use is create an annuity income stream. So you're actually going to have to monetize your assets. In effect, we create your own defined benefit pension plan. A second strategy that we employ, and especially for people that have not reached the age of full retirement benefits for Social Security, which is age 66, is we recommend that you work longer and not touch your Social Security until you get full retirement benefits, which allows you to work and get your Social Security. Another strategy is working part-time. And if you have enough assets, then what we try to do is design a defensive portfolio. And especially when you're first starting to retire, that's extremely important because you do not want to go through a bear market at the beginning of your retirement and suffer a 40 and 50% loss of your assets, because it may take you a decade to recover. Just like it took, if you take a look at the stock market peaked in March of 2000, and it did not exceed that level until April of 2013. You do not want to go through another decade to recoup your losses. So you want to make sure, for example, you have dividend stocks that have a history of raising dividends to provide for inflation. Now that we're in a rate raising cycle and a new bear market in bonds, a laddered bond portfolio and adjustable bonds, and then more importantly, John, I can't emphasize this, having a cash reserve. And the other thing is, you want to be somewhat different. And one of the things that we do when we do a financial plan is we have you fill out a risk questionnaire, and then we analyze your portfolio to make sure that your portfolio matches your risk tolerance. And it's amazing at the disparity that we often find in terms of people, what they consider to be their risk profile in terms of where they're invested. And a lot of this, John, is a lot of individuals have their main savings and their 401k plans at work. They very seldom make adjustments. They set it up when they went to work for the company. They had their asset allocation made and they don't change it. And so a lot of times as they age and have gotten older, their risk profile should be coming down versus, let's say, when it was younger, and they don't make that adjustment.
Why don't you give us a couple of examples of the things you were just talking about?
Let's talk about working longer. I had a doctor client. He's still a client today. This is a client that's been with us since 1985. Third generation, by the way. Started out with his father. Then he became a client, and now I'm working with his kids. And basically, when I met him in 1985, he said, you know, Jim, I want to have $1 million when I retire. Now, think back to 1985. $1 million invested in government bonds and Ginnie Mae's would have produced anywhere from 14% to 15%. So a doctor at that time, you know, $1 million with interest rates where they were, that would have been an income of $140,000 to $150,000. Imagine earning that today. When he ended up retiring at age 65, he didn't want to retire fully. Instead of $1 million, we had $2 million, but $2 million did not buy the same level of income when we first started to work. And so what we decided, and to make him feel more comfortable, he didn't want to retire completely. And he got a part-time job where he worked a couple days a week. He was a neurologist, so he only worked a couple days a week. But John, that produced enough income that allowed him to live off that with his Social Security, and he did not touch his investment portfolio. So we were able to grow that investment portfolio until he finally retired at age 70 and a half and had to begin mandatory distributions. But those extra 5 years of work and a bull market allowed him to accumulate a lot more assets. I have another client, also a doctor. She is a single person. She's not married. And Basically, she thought of retiring at age 58. And then all of a sudden, when she started looking at the things she liked to do, especially travel, she simply didn't have the money to do everything that she wanted to based on the assets that she had. So she made the decision to work part-time, and she's frugal enough. When she got a divorce, they sold the big house. And so what she did is she took her proceeds, bought herself a smaller condo, paid cash for it, and it's her goal is she's going to work to age 66, at which time she'll be eligible for Social Security, but she's going to allow her portfolio to grow from age 58 to 66 and then take Social Security at that time, which she'll be eligible for full retirement benefits. I had another client who had basically $3 million of assets, but did not want to reduce their lifestyle. They did a lot of travel. They were active at the country club, and they wanted a steady source of income. They didn't want to have the unpredictability of so much invested in, let's say, the stock market or the bond market. So what we did is we took one third of the assets and we put it in an immediate annuity that produced a monthly income of a little over $4,000 a month. And that was $50,000 a year. When you added their Social Security of $36,000 a year, that produced $86,000 a year of predictable income. Didn't change, didn't matter what was going on in the stock market. The balance of their portfolio was invested in a balanced portfolio of bonds and stocks, which created $70,000 of income. So basically, in this case, they had over $150,000 and they could enjoy the same lifestyle. Fortunately, in this case, there was basically a $500,000 life insurance policy, a whole life policy, which we recommended, which would replace his wife's Social Security, because a husband and wife, when one spouse passes away, you're down to one Social Security. Usually the wife elects to take the husband's Social Security. And so what this $500,000 life insurance policy would do is replace the loss of income that the wife would give up, assuming that the husband would be the first to pass on. We had another client who basically went through two major downturns, one in 2000 and 2007, was totally risk adverse. And what we had to do is we had to take time and just educate this individual. But in the end, what we did is we put half the portfolio in a laddered bond portfolio, which would not fluctuate dramatically because it was laddered. And then also the income was predictable. And then we went into blue chip dividend paying stocks. They had a history. They were blue chip names, names you would recognize. And then we created a 10% cash reserves. And it was interesting because in 2011, when we had a lot of turbulence in the market, he got nervous. But I said, look, your bonds are still paying you interest. That's not going to change. And when they come due, you're going to get your money. The stocks you own are paying you dividends. In fact, some of them have increased their dividends, and most of them will this year. And then those cash reserves, I said, if we've got cash reserves here, in case you have an emergency, you don't have to liquidate any assets. So over time, he got used to the fluctuations in the market. And really, you know, when you have 60% of your assets in fixed or cash, there really isn't a lot of volatility in the portfolio. In a final case study, and this is something that we're doing more and more, is what I call a tax and home inversion. Had a client, lived here in San Diego, had a house that they raised the kids in worth over $1 million. There was a slight mortgage on it. I think it was a couple hundred thousand. They sold their California home. They bought a home in Sun City, Arizona, and paid cash for it, which allowed them to free up $500,000 of equity in their home, which was put into a portfolio. And they both decided that they didn't really want to retire. They wanted to do a couple things. So they worked part-time. In his case, being an accountant, he started a little tax business doing tax returns for a lot of his friends that he met through the country club. And those supplemental income that he gets during the tax season, basically only works about 4 months out of the year, pays for the summer travel, which they do in their RV, because if you live in Arizona, you know what happens during the summer when the temperatures get over 110 degrees.
Well, since we're on the subject of examples, let us take a look at this week's case study. Remember that, as with all of our case studies, this is an hypothetical illustration based on real-life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed. Also, we have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points Jim is making here.
Yeah, this is the case study we're going to call Beware of the Overzealous Advisor. And our case this week is Bill and Marcia White. Bill is age 57. Marcia is actually 1 year older, age 58. They want to retire soon. Marty, based on his health questionnaire, could live to age 90. And his wife could live to age 95. Their risk tolerance is moderate. Basically, their goals, investment objectives, like many, were income and to preserve purchasing power. Now, let me give you a little color. Basically, Bill has to travel often for work, which has made it very difficult for him to manage their finances. He's been with the same broker for 2 decades and has been recently offered his broker's basic financial planning services. Working with his broker, Bill had accumulated a large position in precious metals, cash, and some stock holdings in blue chip companies. A lot of that came from inheritance from his parents. His current tax situation now and into retirement are a concern. He's hoping to change careers or retire in the next 5 to 10 years so he can travel less and spend more time with family. He spends a lot of time on the road as a regional manager, and that's one thing that starting to wear on him as he gets older. Marcia, on the other hand, is hoping to focus on savings for retirement now that their youngest just finished college. She's probably more risk adverse than her husband and is concerned about their current investment strategy and about their concerns is their ability to retire, since they will have Social Security as an income source and basically whatever they put aside and saved. What was amazing is we put them through a financial plan because they weren't really confident of the plan offered by their advisor. It was pretty much standard stuff. Their current risk score on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest risk, 10 being the highest, was 4. In their portfolio, the risk was 7, a lot of that coming from an overdue concentration in precious metals. What was important to them as we went through the discussions was maintaining lifestyle, as it is for many people that retire, lowering taxes, and managing investment risk. And basically, if we take a look at their budget, their essential budget was $43,000, discretionary was $29,000. A lot of that was travel, vacations, and eating out. Bill's salary was $85,000. Marcia's was $42,000. So basically, they were putting aside money. They had a surplus of roughly about $54,000 a year. They figured if they retired, staying as they are, the essential budget would go up because they'd be doing more things. Discretionary would also pretty much stay the same. Their Social Security would be $37,000. Their shortfall would be roughly about $40,000 a year. Now, looking at assets, their primary residence was worth $330,000. Bill's retirement plan was $385,000. Marcia's retirement was $44,000. They had about $110,000 in cash and $200,000 in precious metals at a major loss because they had bought, unfortunately, when the price of gold was going up in 2010 and 11, they added and doubled up on their position because everybody thought they were going to make a fortune in gold back then. So their investment assets were $739,000, total assets of about $1,070,000. And about $75,000 in liability. The thing that we pointed out to them, especially with the risk profile, improper diversification. Number two, insufficient assets to support their lifestyle and handling sequence risk. In other words, they could not afford to go through another downturn with their existing assets as they did with their precious metals portfolio because they lost almost 40% of what was once a substantial portfolio in precious metals. And then, of course, managing income for retirement. Basically, what we did is we put them in a balanced account with a little bit more growth because there was no way they had sufficient assets to retire. So we needed to put more towards the stock side. So consequently, the dividend yields would be lower. They were still going to have a shortfall. So we basically said, you are going to have to work a lot longer. And what was really kind of staring them in the face was their existing plan that they had done with their advisor showed them a probability of success of living throughout their retirement years without having to run out of money was 94%. We took the same profile and we ran it through our Monte Carlo simulations, and we came up with a 78% chance, meaning that they were most likely going to run out of money somewhere midway into their retirement years. So what we did is we recommended that Bill reduce their holdings in precious metals to about a 6% allocation of their net worth as the first step in reallocating their investments. We also recommended they use a portion of cash to purchase a rental home that could be used to create more retirement income, because where they're at, properties were cheap. We presented them with the option to delay retirement or reduce their monthly expenses, but they were not keen on either options. The least painful option was to delay retirement. We recommended they do that by working 2 to 3 extra years or by reducing their hours and working part-time. Our biggest concern was their unsustainable withdrawal rate of 5% and 6%. We basically said, look, you know, at some point the market is not going to be going up 5% or 6%. There's going to be a time when it's going down 20% a year. And we also said delaying retirement, especially after the next major economic downturn. So they had serious concerns about the economy. Both were conservative investors. However, the financial advice they received was based on historical evidence and did not account for the current market environment. In the end, they took the more conservative approach, which aligns more with their expectations. So basically, what they're going to do is end up working longer and putting aside more money. And basically, as we told them, I said, you know, the market for the future, especially with high-priced stocks and low interest rates, the returns are going to be lower going forward. And that's something that we had to tell them, that, look, these optimistic assumptions of 6% to 8% in the bond market used in your other plan is unrealistic when you have 10-year treasuries that have been fluctuating between 2.25% and 2.5%. And the stock market return of 10%, I brought up the fact and reminded them of the what happened between the stock market between the year 2000 and 2013. It went down for 2.5 years, went up for 5, and then went down for another 2.5 years. And so basically, in the end, they took the more conservative route, as many people are, which is, you know, reduce your lifestyle, work longer to get benefits and start accumulating more, because it's simple math. You can't do it. And assuming these rosy optimistic assumptions of 10% returns in the market, 6% and 7% or 5% or 6% in the bond market, John, just don't hold true anymore.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, Paul Horn is our guest. Common errors made by investment advisors. I had thought for a while there they were infallible, Jim, but I've suddenly come to realize that's not true.
And now, we in the industry are known to make mistakes.
Well, also, you know, you talk about common errors. I think one of the errors that I notice is I call overshoot. And that is, you know, you talked about retirement being based on a three-leg stool. We started out the conversation by saying Social Security, secure pension plan, and personal savings. And a lot of times investors that don't, or advisors that don't stay up with what's going on, keep repeating the old patterns, even when the time for changing the patterns has passed. You know, it's already gone past. And so that would be the first mistake, I would think, is trying to deal with the present based on things that worked in the past. So anyway, else, speaking of working on things, what are we looking for in the weeks to come here on Lifetime Income?
We're going to start focusing on income and risk, because one of the things that we do see risk out there, even though we think that this market could muddle along here for a while. But John, they never ring the bell at the market top, and there are risk out there in ways that you don't see today, especially as we covered on the weekend show a couple of weeks ago, where the next bubble is, which we think is passive investing with index funds, which are driving these huge valuations that we're seeing in these Fab Five stocks like Amazon, Netflix, Tesla, and others that have just gotten to be high price. So we're going to focus on risk and income in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.